Yes, Minister by Anthony Jay and Jonathan Lynn, starring Paul Eddington as the Right Honourable James Hacker MP and Nigel Hawthorne as Sir Humphrey Appleby, with Derek Fowles as Bernard Woolley in A Question of Loyalty.
And you'll let me have your redraft on establishment levels by Thursday, Peter.
Do you need it that early?
I don't need it that early, but the minister has to read it before he faces the select committee.
Ah.
And what makes it harder, he has to remember it.
I see.
And what makes it hardest of all, he has to understand it.
Mm.
Incidentally, was it you who wrote the minister's Washington speech?
Yes, Sir Humphrey.
Oh, really? Well done. Excellent.
Yes?
Couldn't have been better.
Thank you, Sir Humphrey.
Not at all.
Thank you. The minister's in his office now, Sir Humphrey.
Ah, right. Well, thank you all.
Thank you.
Bernard. Well, how have you enjoyed having your minister out of the office for a week?
Not very much.
Haven't you?
It makes things very difficult.
Oh, Bernard. A minister's absence is a godsend. You can do the job properly for once. No silly questions, no bright ideas, no fussing about what the papers are saying. You know, sometimes I think our minister doesn't believe he exists unless he's reading about himself in the papers. You know, I'll bet that the first thing he says when he comes into the office is, are there any press reports of his Washington speech?
How much do you bet?
£1.
Done.
Right.
He won't because he's asked already. In the car on the way back from Heathrow.
Well, you're learning, Bernard. There you are.
Thank you.
So you see why a minister's absence is a good idea, do you?
Yes, but so much work piles up.
Well, splendid. What with a couple of days briefing before he goes, and the debriefing and backlog when he gets back, you can keep him out of the department's hair for nearly a fortnight. And for the next 6 months, whenever he complains about not being informed about something, you can tell him it came up while he was away.
I see. Anyway, we ought to be seeing him now.
Oh, Bernard, incidentally, what did you think about that splendid Washington speech Peter wrote for him? British government administration is a model of loyalty, integrity, and efficiency. There's a ruthless war on waste. We're cutting bureaucracy to the bone. A lesson Britain can teach the world.
But is it true? Can we prove it?
A good speech isn't one where we can prove the minister is telling the truth. It's one where nobody else can prove he's lying.
But even so, I...
Yeah?
Well, I'm sure Peter did a frightfully good job on it and everything, but I just wondered if it might have perhaps been a bit boring for the audience.
Of course it was boring. Bored the pants off them. Ghastly to have to sit through it, I should think.
But then...
Minister's speeches aren't written for the audience they're speaking to, Bernard.
No?
Delivering the speech is just the formality you have to go through to get the press release into the papers. We can't worry about entertaining people. We're not script writers for a comedian. Not a professional one, anyway. The point is, it said the right things.
But why do they have to be said in public?
Oh, it's vital. Once that speech has been printed, he's committed to defending us in front of the select committee and
well,
things.
He defends us anyway.
Only while it suits him. Once things go wrong, a minister's first instinct is to rat on his department. So you write him a speech that makes him nail his trousers to the mast.
You mean nail his colours to the mast?
No, nail his trousers to the mast. Then he can't climb down. Minister.
Hello, Humphrey. Bernard, didn't you say there were some press cuttings of my Washington speech?
Thank you, Bernard.
Yes, I put them in the box, Minister.
Minister, you do realise the importance of tomorrow's select committee hearing, don't you?
No, of course I do, Humphrey. The press will be there.
No, it's not just a question of press. This is a scrutiny of the department's future operation. If we were to emerge from the hearing as extravagant or incompetent...
Are we extravagant and incompetent?
Well, of course not. But there are hostile MPs on the committee, especially the member for Derbyshire East.
Oh, God. Betty Oldham isn't going to be there, is she?
Alas, yes. So I do urge you to master this brief, Minister. And do please ask me if you have any problems, won't
you? Another brief on the select committee. I've only just mastered one on the plane coming over.
Oh, really? What was in it?
I can't quite remember. Well, it's so hard to concentrate on the plane. They keep trying to serve you drinks and show you movies and wake you up.
Yes, yes, I'm sure. It's frightfully hard to concentrate if you keep being woken up, Minister. No, seriously. This is the first and only brief containing possible questions from the committee, all with the appropriate answers carefully presented to give the department's position.
Are they all absolutely accurate?
It is carefully presented to give the department's position.
Now, Humphrey, these select committees are very important. I can't be seen to mislead them.
You will not be seen to mislead them.
But is it the truth?
The truth and nothing but the truth.
And the whole truth?
Of course not, Minister.
So. So we tell them we're keeping secrets, do we?
Indeed not.
Why not?
He that would keep a secret must keep it secret that he hath a secret to keep.
Who said that?
It was Sir Humphrey.
No. Who said it originally?
Oh, Francis Bacon, wasn't it?
Why are ministers never allowed to go anywhere without briefs?
It's in case they get caught with their trousers down.
Very droll, Bernard. Look, we're not going to be interrupted, are we?
I've kept your diary empty for the rest of the day.
Right. Bernard, remind me what was in the submission I read on the plane.
Well, it's more or less a rehash of the report the department produced last year.
And the year before?
Yes, Minister.
And the year before that?
Ever since 1867. with a few appropriate alterations, of course. Shall we go through it point by point?
Do we have to? I'm still half jet-lagged.
Well, it's up to you, Minister, but all the press will be there tomorrow.
Right. Let's get down to it.
The fact is, Mr. Chairman, that the Department of Administrative Affairs is run to a high standard of efficiency and does indeed support and service the administrative work of all government departments, as we said in our submission to this committee.
Thank you, Minister. questions? Mrs. Oldham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Minister, have you ever heard of Malcolm Rhodes?
No.
I see. Well, Malcolm Rhodes was an assistant secretary in the DAA until he resigned last year.
Well, there are 23,000 people in the DAA.
Oh, quite. But he resigned, or was eased out, became a management consultant in America, and has written a book, of which this is an advance proof, in which he makes a number of astounding allegations of waste of public money in the British civil service, particularly in your department.
May I have a quick word with my officials? Do we know anything about this?
I didn't know that Rhodes had written a book.
Oh, my God.
Do you know Rhodes?
Yes.
Who is he?
A troublemaker, Minister.
He's not sound, Minister.
Well, what's in the book?
We don't know.
Well, what do I say about it?
Stall.
Stall? What do you mean, stall?
Stall, meaning avoiding answering, Minister.
I know what stall means, Bernard. What do you mean by sending me out into a typhoon without even giving me an umbrella?
An umbrella wouldn't be much use in a typhoon, Minister. Because the wind would get underneath.
Oh, do shut up, Bernard.
Have you had sufficient consultation with your officials now, Minister?
Thank you.
Well, let me read you some of the scandalous facts that Mr. Rhodes reveals. For instance, and I quote, at number 4 regional supply depot in Herefordshire, there are 2 former aircraft hangars used only for stores, but which are centrally heated to 70 degrees Fahrenheit day and night. What have you to say about that?
Really? I can't be expected to answer that sort of detail without notice. It may not even be true.
It is. I had it checked last week. What I'm asking is what conceivable reason there could be for such appalling extravagance.
Well, some materials deteriorate badly at low temperatures. It depends what was being stored.
Copper wire.
Yes, well, copper wire can corrode in damp conditions, can't it?
It's plastic coated.
Plastic coated, yes. Well, plastic coated, yeah, well, I'll certainly, yes, have it looked into.
He also says that your department insists on ordering all pens, pencils, paper clips and so on, centrally, and then distributing them against departmental requisitions.
Seems very sensible to me. There are big savings on bulk purchases.
And he demonstrates that this procedure is 4 times more expensive than if local officers went out and bought what they wanted in the high street.
I'll certainly have it looked into.
Looked into, yes. You did say in Washington last week that your department conducted a ruthless war on waste and could teach the world a lesson. How would you reconcile that with spending £200,000 on a roof garden on top of the supplementary benefits office in Kettering?
Have you looked into... Well, yes, I will. I mean, my responsibility is for policy.
And if it's detailed administration...
I think, Chairman, that the permanent secretary to the DAA is due to appear before us next week. Would not he be the appropriate person to answer these questions?
Thank you. Could you see that Sir Humphrey's notified? Perhaps we might let him see the allegations.
New allegations of government waste. Some big questions to answer. Minister, you have placed me in a very difficult position.
Well, what about the position you put me in? Here's the Prime Minister asking for economies, left, right and centre. And I look as if I'm wasting everything that everyone else has saved.
Oh, Minister, no one else has saved anything. You ought to know that by now.
Yes, but they all look as though they have.
Well, couldn't you have stalled a bit more effectively?
What do you mean, stalled?
Well, blurred things a bit. You're normally so good at blurring the issue.
What?
You have a considerable talent for making things unintelligible, Minister.
I beg your pardon?
No. I mean it as a compliment, I assure you. Blurring issues is one of the basic ministerial skills.
What are the others?
Delaying decisions, dodging questions, juggling figures, bending facts, and concealing errors.
But what did you expect me to do?
Well, couldn't you have made it look as though you were doing something and then done nothing? Like you usually do.
But, Humphrey, if these revelations are true...
Exactly, if. You could, for instance, have discussed the nature of truth.
The Select Committee couldn't be less interested in the nature of truth. They're all MPs.
Well, you could have said it was a security matter.
How can HP pencils be a security matter?
It depends what you write with them.
Why on earth are we building roof gardens on offices?
Well, we took over the office design from an American company that was going to occupy it. It just happened nobody noticed the roof garden on the plans.
Oh, God.
Well, a tiny mistake. The sort anyone could make.
Tiny? £200,000? Give me an example of a big mistake.
Letting people find out about it.
Why are we heating sheds full of wire?
Do you want the truth?
If it's not too much trouble.
All the staff use these sheds for growing mushrooms.
Well, stop them!
They've been doing it since 1945. It's almost the only perk of an extremely boring job.
What about Rhodes' proposal for saving money on stationery orders? Why didn't we accept that?
Minister, that man was a troublemaker, a crank. He had an unhealthy obsession about efficiency and economy.
But why didn't we adopt his proposal? It would have saved millions of pounds.
It would have meant a lot of work to implement it.
So?
Taking on a lot more staff.
Oh, Humphrey.
Well, disprove it.
Well, I can't, obviously.
Exactly.
Well, you're just making it up, aren't you?
Of course.
Why?
As an example of how to handle a select committee.
This is all very well, Sir Humphrey. But let's get down to details. This heated aircraft hangar, for example.
Oh, yes, indeed. I fully understand the committee's concern, but it can be very cold in Herefordshire in winter, and even civil servants cannot work.
We aren't talking about civil servants. We are talking about coils of wire with plastic coats to keep them warm.
Yes, but staff are in and out all the time. It's a question of staff welfare policy.
Well, I suggest this policy is costing the taxpayer millions of pounds. Nothing to say, Sir Humphrey.
It is not for me to comment on government policy. You must ask the minister.
But you advise the minister.
Well, I think the chairman is aware that I cannot disclose how I advise my minister. The minister is responsible for policy.
All right. So we'll ask the minister. What about stationery requisition savings?
Well, that would have involved putting very considerable government patronage in the hands of junior staff.
Considerable government patronage? Buying a packet of paper clips?
Well, it's government policy to exercise strict control over the number of people allowed to spend its money. I'm sure you'll agree that's right and proper.
But it's plain common sense to allow people to buy their own paper clips.
The government policy has nothing to do with common sense.
Well, don't you think it's time the policy was changed? Well, Sir Humphrey...
It is not for me to comment on government policy. You must ask the minister.
But the minister advises us to ask you.
And I'm advising you to ask the minister.
When does this end?
Oh, as soon as you like.
Well, let's come to the roof garden.
Yes, with pleasure. It was part of a wide variety of roof insulation schemes. Which the government undertook to test in the interest of fuel economy.
But £200,000?
Yes. Well, it was thought that the sale of flowers and vegetable produce might offset the cost.
And did it?
No.
Well, then why not abandon the garden?
Well, it's there now. And it does insulate the roof. And we aren't building any more.
But you've wasted £200,000.
Well, it was the government's policy to test all proposals for fuel saving.
At this fantastic waste of taxpayers' money? You agree the money was wasted.
It is not for me to comment on government policy. You must ask the minister.
Look, Sir Humphrey, whatever we ask the minister, he says is an administrative question for you. And whatever we ask you, you say is a policy question for the minister. How do you suggest we find out what's going on?
Yes, I do think there is a real dilemma here, in that while it has been government policy to regard policy as the responsibility of ministers and administration as the responsibility of officials, questions of administrative policy can cause confusion between the administration of policy and the policy of administration. Especially when responsibility for the administration of the policy of administration conflicts or overlaps with the responsibility for the policy of the administration of policy.
That's a load of meaningless drivel, isn't it?
It is not for me to comment on government policy, trust the minister.
That was a big help, Humphrey.
Oh, thank you, Minister. I did my best.
You did your best for yourself, perhaps. But you haven't solved anything. The day after tomorrow, we'll both be sitting there, side by side, getting the third degree from that committee. We have to have proper answers, the same answers.
Well, we must establish what our position is.
Well, what are the facts?
I'm discussing our position, Minister. The facts are neither here nor there.
Well, I see, all right. What is our position, then?
Well, we just have to choose one of the five standard excuses which deal with each of their allegations. A different one for each, if possible.
Five standard excuses?
Mm. Now, first, there's excuse we used, for instance, in the Anthony Blunt case.
Which was?
There is a perfectly satisfactory explanation for everything, but security forbids its disclosure. Second, there's the excuse we use for comprehensive schools. It's only gone wrong because of heavy cuts in staff and budget, which have stretched supervisory resources beyond the limit.
But that's not true, is it?
No, but it's a good excuse. Third, the excuse we use for Concord. It was a worthwhile experiment, now abandoned, but not before it provided much valuable data and considerable employment.
But that is true, isn't it? Oh, no, of course it isn't.
Four, the excuse we use for the Munich Agreement. It occurred before some important facts were known and cannot happen again.
What important facts?
That Hitler wanted to conquer Europe.
But that was known to everybody.
Not the Foreign Office.
And five?
And five, the charge of the Light Brigade excuse. It was an unfortunate lapse by an individual which has now been dealt with under internal disciplinary procedures.
And that covers everything?
It has so far everything.
Even wars?
Well, small wars, yes.
All right. So it's real teamwork from now on, Humphrey?
United we stand, divided we fall, Minister.
Good. Where do we start?
Well,
Minister, may I interrupt? You have to be at the House in 10 minutes, and the Prime Minister's special advisor wonders if you could pop into number 10 for a drink sometime today. Sir Mark Spencer.
Mark Spencer? Yes, of course. Yes,
I suggested 5:30.
Fine. God, I knew there'd be trouble. Now the PM's getting interested in why our explanations to the committee have been so feeble. That's all I needed.
Well, perhaps it is just for a drink.
Don't be silly, Humphrey. You don't get invited for drinks at number 10 because they think you're thirsty. Look, I'll see you back here at 6:30.
Yes, right.
We'll cook up a story, right?
Agree our position, Minister.
That's what I said.
Ah. Come in, Jim. Scott?
Yeah, thanks.
How are things going?
Fine. Look, that select committee, well, it was a bit of a shock having that book thrown at us out of the blue, but it's all under control. Thank you. Humphrey and I are getting together this evening. We'll be able to explain everything. Nothing for the PM to worry about. You know, what beats me is how Malcolm Rhodes got all that information. It seems most of it happened outside his division. And I wouldn't mind knowing who got those advance proofs to Betty Oldham. PM must be livid. But it's certainly no fault of mine.
What makes you think the PM is livid?
Well, surely...
Let's try and look at the situation logically, shall we, Jim?
Of course.
Let me ask you some questions. What has the PM been trying to achieve in public expenditure?
Cuts, obviously.
And why has there been so little success?
Because of civil service obstruction.
Right. Are all the cabinet committed to this policy of cutting public expenditure?
Think so, yes. Certainly I am.
Well, if that is so, why have virtually no ministers achieved any real cuts?
Well, Rome wasn't built in a day, you know.
No. It's because all the ministers have gone native.
Oh, I don't think...
The civil service has house-trained them to a man.
Well, some of them perhaps. I certainly have.
If a minister were really trying to cut expenditure, how would he react to a book exposing massive government waste?
Well, it would depend on... what are you trying to say?
Do you know what the civil service is saying about you?
No.
That you're a pleasure to work with.
Oh, that's very nice. Oh.
That's what Barbara Woodhouse says about her prize-winning spaniels.
Ah.
I've even heard Sir Humphrey Appleby say of you that you're worth your weight in gold. What does that suggest to you?
You mean I failed utterly?
You look as if you need another scotch.
No, I suppose the PM is not pleased with my performance at the Select Committee because I failed to cover up the failure.
On the contrary, the PM is not pleased because you're covering up too well.
Thank you. What?
Well, don't you see? You're protecting the civil service. You're protecting Humphrey Appleby. The PM and I are doing our level best to expose why cuts in public expenditure are not taking place. And you are helping the civil service to defy the government.
Am I?
Mm. Now, you were wondering where Betty Oldham got the advance proofs of that book, hmm? And where Malcolm Rhodes got the inside information?
Well...
Can't you guess?
You mean... the PM?
Of course not. Not mean, directly.
You mean... You mean you? So... Well, what should I do at the Select Committee?
There's only one course open to you. Absolute loyalty.
Ah. Who to?
That's your decision.
Actually occurred before some important facts were known. And I am able to assure you that no such oversight could possibly occur again. Wouldn't you agree, Minister?
Yes, Sir Humphrey's reply is absolutely correct.
John?
The correct official reply. But, I've been thinking very deeply since our last meeting, and really there is no doubt that this committee is on to something. Of course, there's waste. Whatever the excuses, we can always find for individual cases. And you've convinced me that our whole attitude is wrong. Ministers and their civil servants cover up and defend where we should seek out and destroy.
Minister,
I have spoken to Mr. Malcolm Rhodes, the author of this invaluable book, and he has agreed to head an outside independent inquiry into the whole of government administration, starting with my department.
How does Sir Humphrey react to this?
He's in full agreement. We work as a team, don't we, Humphrey? And I may say, he's a pleasure to work with.
But, Minister, this account of what's been going on doesn't square with what you were saying in your Washington speech about a ruthless war on waste.
Well, I'm an old-fashioned sort of chap, Betty. I believe in things like loyalty. Whatever you say to them privately, you defend your chaps in public. Hey, Humphrey.
In that case, aren't you being rather disloyal to them now?
No, because in the end, a minister has a higher loyalty. A loyalty to Parliament. A loyalty to the nation. And that loyalty must take precedence. Come what may. Painful, as it may be. My belief is that one is loyal to one's department and one's officials until the evidence is overwhelming. But I must say now in public what I've long been saying in private, that reforms can and will be carried out. And I know that in Sir Humphrey I will find my staunchest ally. Isn't that so, Humphrey?
Yes, Minister.
That was a big help, Minister.
Well, I did my best.
You did your best for yourself, perhaps. So this is your idea of teamwork, is it? Most amusing.
I had to do it.
You had to do what? cravenly admitting everything to that committee. Don't you realize how calamitous this has been for us?
Not for me, I hope.
You hope in vain, Minister. The department is up in arms. They'll have very little confidence in you in the future. And as for number 10, well, I shudder to think how the PM may react to a public admission of failure.
Oh, a personal letter from the Prime Minister.
Eh? Well, I did warn you. Bernard, perhaps you should give some thought to drafting a face-saving letter of resignation for the Minister.
Dear Jim, we haven't seen enough of each other lately. Would you be free to come to lunch at Chequers on Sunday? We shall just be the family. Do please bring Annie and Lucy. I look forward so much to seeing you.
I don't think
it's paid off. It's paid off.
A conspiracy. That drink with Mark Spencer.
So wonderful. Look, we haven't seen enough of each other lately. Lunch at Chequers, just the fan. Look, it's handwritten. Do you know what this letter is worth, Humphrey?
I believe the going rate is 30 pieces of silver.
No, Humphrey. Integrity and loyalty have been rewarded.
Loyalty?
I supported you, Humphrey, just the way you have always supported me. Isn't that so?
Yep.
Did you say something, Humphrey?
I think he said yes, Minister.
In A Question of Loyalty, you heard Paul Eddington as Jim Hacker, Nigel Hawthorne as Sir Humphrey, and Derek Folds as Bernard. Betty Holdham, MP, was played by Judy Parfitt, and Sir Mark Spencer by Nigel Stock. William Hope was Peter, Helena Breck, Gillian, John Strickland, the committee chairman, and Arnold Diamond, the MP. Yes, Minister was written by Anthony Jay and Jonathan Lynn and adapted for radio by the producer, Pete Atkin.